Hi, I'm Peter Gilmore, and you're listening to the Crest of the Wave podcast from RIA Northern Ireland. In this episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down with one of my sporting heroes, Ali Young. After three Olympics and a world championship title in the ILCA class, it's fair to say she knows her stuff about high-performance sailing. While she was over coaching at RIA Northern Ireland's female focus camp, we took a deep dive into the highs and lows of her career. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Ali, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Crest of the Wave podcast, and a pleasure to have you in sunny Ballygum Yacht Club here in Northern Ireland. How are things?
Yeah, it's great. Thanks for inviting me onto the show. And
yeah, well, thanks for coming.
Really, yeah, interested to see where this conversation takes us.
Yeah, so you're here in Northern Ireland in slightly unique circumstances. We're a female focus camp. It's the first time RIA Northern Ireland have done anything like this, really. A female focus camp is sort of what it does on the tin in terms of it's a training camp of all girls, but how's today been for you?
Yeah, it's been really interesting, like a group of 25 young female sailors in toppers, ilpers and fevers. It's been a really good energy in the room. Actually, really kind of straight off the bat, like the youngsters getting on with each other, trying to learn some new things off each other. So yeah, it's been a good vibe to the day.
Yeah, and at the beginning of the day, you talked about two key themes. What of the female focus camp, that is, what were they and why did you pick them out as the two key themes?
Yeah, run with two themes of connection and being the best me. That connection piece, like really getting them to grow their connection across the sailors that are here today, across different classes, across people from different regions, because the wider they've got those connections, the more it's going to help them build that passion for the sport. The more you can share learning off each other, and the more they can then really, really push themselves on, which is where that second theme of being the best me kind of comes into play. Because whatever your driver behind the sport, is it the challenge? Is it learning? Is it having fun? Actually, really finding that way to get the best of yourself. If you've got that wider group of people that you're working with, you can really push yourselves forwards much more.
It was something which really sort of struck me at the beginning of the day, because me personally, I've been to a lot of training camps and it's just like, hey, we're going to work on boat handling today, you know, it's just a straightforward performance camp, but picking out those two key themes and being the best you, I've personally took that away, although I wasn't on the female focus camp for I wonder what reasons. I found that a really interesting take on the day, and I was just interested to see, you know, because you've obviously picked out those themes and helped drive the camp for what it was today. What were your early experiences of sailing? How did you get into it? And I suppose, you know, what barriers did you face? Because ultimately, they were probably some of the driving forces behind you picking out those themes.
Yeah, pleasure. I've never really thought of it that way around, but I got into sailing at a little local reservoir it was pretty small, Trimley Reservoir. You could walk around it in 15 minutes.
You could probably sail around it in six.
Well, yeah, all on one tack, because the wind goes whoosh. Not actually a massive junior sailing group there, but there was a thing called the Midland Loppy Circuit, and you went to different club kind of every weekend, so that kind of grew some connections across some different sailors. And actually, one of the other coaches here this weekend, Robin Phillips, we were oppy sailing together 25 years ago, something like that. So actually, when you see those connections, how they can last over different time periods. That drive, I guess, around the being the best me was always setting myself the next little small goal. So it wasn't like I started sailing and I wanted to go to the Olympics. Like, I didn't know what the Olympics were, but It was like, oh, well, we'd do this middle Oppy circuit, and then the Oppy squad had red jackets, so I wanted to get one of those, and then, oh, the youth squad, and blah, blah, blah. But the next little stepping stone, and really, okay, what do I need to develop to get me there? Which hopefully the sailors here seeing, we've got a range of ability, but if they see what some of those better sailors are doing, oh, actually, how do I make that step up for themselves?
Your achievements in some respects sort of speak for themselves, and I could just ream off your sailing CV, but in terms of that being the best me, is that something which you applied day to day in your Olympic journey?
I think early on in my Olympic journey I was probably more driven by outcomes, but which then maybe sounds a little bit weird, but yeah, definitely through the latter half of my career it was actually, how do I get to be the best me? What does that look like in this environment? What is the support team that I need to build around me to help me do that?
But later in your career, being the best me, was that in terms of I get up in the morning and this side of breakfast I'm going to be the best me? Or was it more long-term than that?
I guess more long-term. It was about, can I do the details which are helping me to get where I'm trying to get to, recognising what's kind of self-destructive perhaps, but yeah, I think maybe through maturity and through experiences that you've had, it's like actually the sport, when you look back on it, you don't look back on the podiums, you look back on the connections, people you've met, the challenges you faced, the highs and the lows, you know, like sport is life, it's not a podium, it's not a result.
Yeah, that's great for me to hear, who's probably a bit heavy on the connections and not too much on the performance. But on a serious note, what did sort of a week in the life of Ali Young look like when you were performing at the top level?
That's too long ago now. very, very detailed, very focused, very like, very clear on the routines that were helping me to get to prepare me best for competition or prepare me best for the training. In some ways, I guess that stuff's a little bit robotic, and at times maybe actually missing out on, like, hey, Ballyhome's actually a really cool place to sail when you look around and stuff.
It is on a day like today when the sun's splitting the stones.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a different story come the youth Europeans in the summer. But yeah, very, very rigorous with what I was doing. And some of that driven from the, well, not driven from, like, aided by the people that were part of my support network.
Yeah, because my sort of very early memories of you was when I was coming up through the later class, and you were, I think, probably campaigning for your second or third Olympics. And I certainly wouldn't have been sitting down and have a 20-minute chat for you. I was like, oh, there's Ali Young. So this is pretty cool for me. But I always look from the outside in as top performers, as people who probably spend, you know, 5 or 6 days out in the water and, you know, bike rides and that. Was that something you were really big into?
Yeah, time on the water, in the gym, on the bike, looking at data, kind of, it is all encompassing, and yeah, that leads you to being quite intense, and maybe people being like, oh, taking a back step from you, the same, it's like, it's your passion, it's all encompassing, and it fuels itself in that way.
And then, you know, sailing wise, it can be a bit of a roller coaster, and you've sort of been there, done it with certainly the Ilka class. What is first your high moment of that Olympic journey, and then I'll probably get on to the low point?
My high point would be Tokyo Olympics, actually. I set myself this object goal for the Tokyo Games. I wanted to execute a performance I could be proud of.
Which sounds quite loose in some ways.
Which sounds quite loose and did start to stress me out beforehand. I was chatting to the team psych and I was like, why didn't I just say like a number? Because it's like really clear cut. Like, how am I going to know if I've got there? But actually, come the end of the regatta, I just had this feeling, like this energy that like starts in your chest, that puts your shoulders back, puts light in your eyes and makes you stand a few inches taller. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best regatta I've ever sailed, but it had that feeling.
And why were you proud of that performance?
That's something I've maybe never dug into, because the feeling itself is enough. Like, there've been regattas, like when I won the Worlds in 2016, and other regattas where I've medalled at, but the feeling and the sense of what that regatta gave me, Tokyo, just had something special about it.
But was it, you know, that you had tried the best that you could, or was it that you'd executed small things, or was it just, I don't want to be sort of a cynic, but was it just because it was the last one and you maybe knew it was the last one? I'm trying to just dig into it a little further.
Well, on the last one point, I'd never really considered what I was doing after Tokyo. Like, I hadn't been like, oh, I'm going to do Tokyo and then retire. But the day after our last fleet racing, I was like, all right, cool, I'm retiring tomorrow. Medal race is my last race and that's it. So there was no, it wasn't a thought out thing in that sense, but the feeling that I had led to that decision. And I think that feeling kind of brought about by the experience I'd built up over time, like some of the highs and the lows, some of the challenges that had been part of that run into Tokyo. And I think I kind of left as well as like, I'm never going to work with such a great team of people that I had behind me at that time. So it was, felt a really appropriate moment to then step away.
Yeah, that's nice. And then, hate to be horrible, but what was the low point?
Low point? Probably more in the Rio cycle, where, particularly in the early years of the Rio cycle, I put a lot of pressure on myself over the results, and that kind of became a drive, but it kind of created this internal conflict from that being the best me versus trying to get these results, and just, it was just quite draining in the end.
Mm. It's fantastic now that when you're transitioning now into coaching, that you have this wealth of experience to pass on to girls and boys, myself, like hearing this, because you've been through those highs and the lows, and I think it would be really easy to put numbers on things, and sailing is one of those sports with so many unpredictable factors, it's really hard to put a number on what is a good performance, isn't it?
Yeah, you're very right there. It's very, you can look back on your career and be like, was it successful? Was that regatta successful? It's like, what? Sorry, there's always a lot more context going on behind it. And one of the things I think of when around Olympics is like, there's always someone that's ill, someone that's injured, someone that underperforms, and someone that overperforms. And it's very easy, you see somebody's results and you make a judgment, but you don't actually know the context of what had been going on in their life those 3 months before they made that start line.
Yeah. And now I suppose you have transitioned into coaching. It was interesting, earlier in this podcast series I spoke with Matt McGovern, an Olympic athlete who you would have overlapped with, of course, and he has now become a coach himself. And one of the things we touched on was that there's no hard fast rules when it comes to coaching. There's lots of different ways you can skin a cat, obviously, but do you have any particular coaching philosophies which you like to live by, because you're now the ILCA 6 coach for the British youth team?
Working with the British youth squad with the sixes, I guess my philosophies are built off my experiences, and it'd be work together, work hard, have fun, and that'll most likely get you where you want to get to, and it'll build your passion for the sport, and that piece around being the best you can be, because when people attach it to a result or a number, they're almost setting an artificial ceiling for themselves. They're going, actually, what is the real best you could be in this space?
What does work together mean in a class like the ILCA? Because a lot of people may say it's you in the boat.
Yeah, I mean, once you're on the race course, it is you in the boat, but there's a lot of people that build up to that moment. Your coaches, your training partners, that you work with, your wider network, whether it's physios, psychs, family, whoever that is, it's actually because Olympic sport is so encompassing, it's that network of people that help you get to where you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, again, Matt's probably going to be loving it that I'm bringing him so much into someone else's podcast, that's what it matters. But another thing, you know, we touched on, what sort of messages do you like to deliver in a rib, and how do you like to deliver those messages?
I don't like to deliver to them. It's like being quite measured, quite...
Would you ever go and hike, mate?
I might just pull some kicker on and hike a bit harder. No, try to be measured. There's enough of a roller coaster that people are living that actually bring it back to a level. Try to listen to the individual and actually understand the problem or the challenge that they're facing in the moment, which, yeah, definitely nowhere near where I want to be with that at the moment. It's easy to railroad a conversation somewhere else.
And is that something which you've sort of built an understanding of through dealing with loads of coaches? I'm not asking you to name anyone, but I know personally myself, I've had some coaches I've loved and some coaches I've really not loved.
Yeah, I think it's experience across all the people that you've worked with, whether that's coaches or other specialists, that actually what makes that individual that you're working with feel valued and what helps them to get the best and to make progress.
Because, yeah, bringing it back to today, we spoke at the start how brilliant it is to have you over, and it really doesn't happen often that someone of your calibre comes over to Northern Ireland. And a word which has been pinged around a lot today is role model as a coach. And I know certainly you'd be a role model for me, but to you, what does that phrase role model mean?
I guess for me, role model is about that, seeing something in an aspirational space, seeing the behaviours someone else is executing, not quite the right word, but also having some way of connecting with that individual. So it could be like, oh, I'm a sailor, they're a sailor. Could be through where you live or whatever, but some way to connect to them and some way to aspire to some of the characteristics that they're displaying.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, because yeah, as I touched on, you've always been a bit of a role model for me. And
crikey, Han.
Well, believe it or not, I watched a few laser races from the cheap seats back in the day. I was a bit of a nerd from that respect.
You didn't do the London medal race Irish commentary, did you?
No.
That was blinding.
I wish I had. I've obviously watched you over the years, but when it comes to, you know, driving the sport forward, that's really all about what today is and the numbers of females participating in the sport, especially at the performance level, are just not where we want them to be. That's just simple, cold, hard facts.
Yeah.
What do you think are the big steps we need to take, not just in Northern Ireland, but as the UK and maybe even wider world sailing community?
That's a very good question. sure
well, that's
many,
why
many,
you pay
many,
the big bucks,
yeah. there's many policy makers that scratch their heads over that one. But I think if I'd kind of drill it back to, like, if people are enjoying what they're doing, they're going to stick with it. And if people are making progress, they're generally enjoying what they're doing. And if people have got peers within that space, then they're probably going to enjoy it more as well. And I guess it's how can you grow those wider peer groups. And I think, yes, increasing the female numbers themselves in the junior youth space, that's super important. But like 50% of the classes are now mixed, or there's a male-female counterpart in the Olympic space. So you still got to learn how to work with lads and to build those relationships as well, so that you're part of a wider team. There's not just girls on the team and lads on the team.
Yeah. Well, we're working very hard to achieving those goals. Ali, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been been great to be over here and working with the Irish.
If you'd like to follow in Ali's footsteps, why not join our performance pathway? To find out more about this, get in touch with our performance manager by emailing andrew.baker@raa.org.uk. Take care of yourself until you hear from me next on the Crest of the Wave podcast.